Thanks for tuning in to Organic Matters. I thought just because of what happened the past week in central part of the United States, meaning the tornadoes, that I'd go look up some information, so I went looking for an expert. You know, it's Dr. Elsner. He's a professor emeritus at Florida State University in Tallahassee, Florida, where his research focuses on tornadoes, hurricanes, and climate change. Couldn't have found a better source. So anyway, I'm going to run through what he had to say about the storms last week, and if you could ever find an expert, I think this guy's been in the business about 30 years. To quote Dr. Elsner, "I'm a tornado climatologist, and it's not unusual for people to ask me, after a spate of storms, like the ones we just had ripped through the center of the country this past Friday, so it'll be a week from when you hear this on Saturday, whether climate change has anything to do with what's going on. And the answer is, it's complicated. We've started to detect changes in collective tornado activity, including more powerful storms, and are beginning to understand how these changes might be related to global warming. But much more work needs to be done to gain a fuller understanding of how the changing climate is actually influencing these deadly storms. Let's start with what we know. A tornado is a rapidly rotating column of air inside a thunderstorm. A thunderstorm that lasts more than 20 minutes and is energized by continuously rising air is called a supercell. The rising air is fueled by warm, moist conditions and changes in wind speed or direction associated with the approach of our frontal system where warm and cool air collide. The warm, moist air and that wind shear can generate a series of supercells, some of which produce tornadoes. Connecting tornadoes to climate change is complicated because those two conditions are necessary but not sufficient together for tornadoes to occur. A close-packed group of supercells, for instance, might produce straight-line winds rather than tornadoes. What's needed to generate an outbreak of tornadoes, say 6 to 10 of them, what we had this past week, is ample heat, moisture, and wind shear. But too much of any one of these, or two of those, conditions can disrupt the process of tornado formation. Although tornadoes across the years don't really appear to become more common. There's not more of them. An interesting percentage of them, though, are occurring in outbreaks that we've not seen or been accustomed to in the past. The tornadoes that included Friday night's so-called, they called it the Quad State Tornado, which crossed four states and devastated the town of Mayfield, Kentucky, was the worst, are an example of a outbreaks such as we're discussing. These are on the rise. On a day with at least one tornado, the chance that there are at least seven more increased to more than 15% on an average in 2015 since the times in the 1990s. These increases are even more substantial for larger outbreaks like the one that just occurred this Friday a week ago. Here's what we've also been seeing. A below-average number of tornadoes this year, outbreaks becoming more common during cooler months in recent years, and tornadoes occurring more often across the Southeast compared to the Great Plains, which was more the norm in the past. Cities with the largest decreases in the number of strong tornadoes since 1984 include Dallas, Texas, Oklahoma City, and Houston, Texas. Cities with the largest increases in the number of strong tornadoes since 1984, Atlanta, Georgia, Nashville, Tennessee, and Augusta, Georgia. Very unusual places in the past for tornadoes to be very common. There is also evidence that tornadoes are getting stronger. Tornadoes are rated based on the severity of damage they inflict, using what's known as the EF scale. The rating is made after the fact by forensic experts, and it depends on factors including the type of object struck and how the object was constructed. The damage rating can be converted to a range of wind speeds. As an example, a tornado rated as an inflicting EF2, likely had wind speeds between 111 and 135 miles per hour. And those are at least 3-second gusts. But the subjective nature of the rating process and the randomness of where a tornado tracks make it difficult to draw any definitive conclusions about tornado activity by counting the number of these storms in each rated category. An increase in the number of large clusters does imply a larger threat to damaging tornadoes. However, the percentage of violent tornadoes, that's EF4, with winds, incidentally, that exceed 166 to over, right, at 200 miles per hour or more, increases with the size of the outbreak. Historically, in an outbreak with between 16 and 32 tornadoes, fewer than 4% of them, on average, get rated EF3, where that's winds 136 to 165, or worse. In an outbreak with at least 60 tornadoes, more than 8% of them get rated EF3 or worse. What is causing these changes in tornado behavior is still not completely clear. But global warming is playing a role through changes to the environment that support supercell clusters, specifically the extra heated, moist air fueling the supercells this past Friday a week ago was associated with an exceptionally warm Gulf of Mexico caused by climate change this late in the season. Also, the interaction between the extra heating and the increased wind shear is associated with larger outbreaks, which produce the strongest and longest tracked tornadoes on average. We found that tornado power, estimated using damage path characteristics, increased at a rate of about 5% per year in the years from 1994 till 2017. At least some of the upward trend can be associated with changes to the outbreak environment. Attributing causation is pretty difficult, but it is a big and an important step beyond the association and pattern matching work that we and others have done. Attribution studies are now routinely done on heat waves and floods, but it may take some time yet before such studies of tornadoes are reliable, because these storms still are too small in physical size for weather forecaster models to be able to see in many cases. The ability to determine whether a particular tornado bears the signature of the changing climate will be important not only to understanding the shifting dynamics of our warming world, but to our ability to predict these storms with greater precision. The tornado that ran through Mayfield originally was rated as an EF3. No one ever knows what EF is, just so you know, that's from the Enhanced Fujita Scale, which is a scale that's generally now accepted worldwide to kind of estimate such storms. However, that particular tornado was upgraded Wednesday evening from this week past when the Paducah office tweeted that the portion of the long-track tornado from Fulton County to Muhlenberg County in western Kentucky will be given a preliminary damage rating now of at least an EF4 and a possibility of going all the way up to EF5 after the study. The at least 128-mile length twister had a path that started in Case, Kentucky and ended near Bremen, Kentucky, 2 hours later. It had a width of about a mile and wind speeds of at least 190 miles per hour, the Weather Service said. Even if it's not upgraded any further, it appears to be the biggest, longest, however you want to measure it, tornado ever to hit that part of the country and maybe ever to have hit. They're still studying that. So it's a very interesting storm pattern. It's been coming. I can get into it. If you go back and look at my past shows, I've been following storms and weather change, climate change, whatever you want to call it, probably 20 years. And I've seen it change. I've seen the frequency change without being the scientist myself, but by looking through the science each year, and especially sometimes every month for a year, I've noticed a difference, and now it's becoming apparent. So big storms, maybe not more often, that's the one thing they keep saying, but when it happens, probably more severe. And that's not just tornadoes. That's hurricanes, which look at our past 3 to 5 years. That's also just local weather. We've had rains just in New York this year, the city area even, that were unheard of, because these weather patterns are different than any of the patterns we've really been forecasting or watching since we started really recording weather on an accurate basis. So anyway, that's just a rundown from Organic Matters and from me on that storm. It was such a surprise, number one, the latest in the season, some that there's ever been. It's extremely late for tornadoes in that frequency and that size to ever show up this late in the year, especially as far north as they were. I've always been told that one job that's very interesting is being a weatherman. You can be wrong most of the time and not get fired. There's not very many jobs you can do that with. But I'm going to predict a little bit. I've really went through all the forecasts for the next 30, 60 days. Doesn't mean much, but it does. We are learning to be more accurate all the time on our weather forecasting. And for all practical purposes, the majority of our country is probably going to be warmer than normal through at least January, February. By warmer, that doesn't mean we're going to have, 80, 90 degree days in New Vermont. But the average temps appear this year to be up from what we would call a overall average. So if you're, my son-in-law said the other day, he may not get to use his snow shovel. Living up here, they live in, a suburb of Washington, D.C., but there's just nothing forecast as far down as we can see that could produce any sizable amounts of snow here, at least till later in or early spring. And we'll see if the forecasters are right. They're not always, but they have got, the average has certainly gotten better as we've learned more and more about all the intricacies of what really makes what we call the weather. Thanks for staying tuned to Organic Matters.